Hello there! This show contains material which a truly free society would neither fear nor suppress. The language and concepts contained herein will not cause eternal torment in the place where the guy with the horns and pointed stick conducts his business.
Hello.
Hey.
How you doing?
I haven't seen you in a while.
Hey. Ooh.
Ooh.
How you doing?
You.
You. That is why you are who you are, and I am who I am.
And who are you?
Rich Wilgus.
And I am me. John.
John who?
Tallarico. What happened to the music? It stopped.
And the buzz stops, which is even weirder. We're having this intermittent buzz. It's like a 60 hertz ground, and it'll pop up, and it'll go away, and it'll pop up, and it'll go away, and right now it's gone, so we're happy.
The poltergeist.
The thing that's irritating, though, is your neighbor who obsessively mows his lawn 40 times a day.
It's like the hand-washing thing that we talked about last time. He mows his lawn, like, before dinner and after dinner.
And he tends to mow on the days we record, which is most unfortunate, but
he mows when he's stressed. It's a stress thing.
Yeah, stress goes away when you mow the lawn.
That's right.
Not for me so much.
So what's happening?
Not a whole lot. I don't know.
You said what's that going you told me there's something about the mob that you wanted to talk about.
There was a mob story. Yeah, I've been watching The Sopranos. A friend of mine lent me season one and season two, and I've been kind of catching up with The Sopranos. And it reminded me of a story of when I was living and working in New Jersey.
Jersey, eh?
And New Jersey, if you have watched The Sopranos at all, is where they live. They're the North Jersey, Bergen County mob guys.
Yeah, they're not the
Manhattan Sopranos
mob.
Crew. No, they're not the New York mob. That's a different mob. So anyway, I'm working at this recording studio, and there was this guy. He was sort of a guy who had a lot of these businesses. He was a roofing guy. He was a carpeting guy. His name was Joey.
Garbage collection.
Yeah, you know.
Waste management.
Waste management, olive oil importation, you know, that kind of stuff. And
protection records.
Genco olive oil. And his name was Joey. And I don't remember his last name, but I'm thinking he was Italian. And he...
That's a disparaging remark about my people.
I'm just saying, I happen to think he happened to be, quite by coincidence, Italian. And...
I'm disgusted that you would make those remarks.
The recording studio building used to be a studio called Quantum Recording, and my friend Tim bought it, and we turned it into Big Blue Media, and it took a lot of work. And one thing that needed to be fixed first was the roof, because there was a lot of damage to the roof and a lot of water damage in the building. So they hired this guy, Joey, to come in and fix the roof.
I thought you were going to say the one thing that needed to be fixed was the neighbor. He needed to be taken care of.
No. Nobody needed to be whacked out or anything. But so Joey comes in to fix the roof. And, you know, it's weird because he's got all these little businesses, you know, meat cutting, you know, all that kind of stuff.
But he's wearing a tracksuit at work.
No, and he's not really good at any of them. He's sort of okay at them, you know. So he fixed the roof. It was a flat roof, so they did the whole hot tar kind of roof thing. And then he came in and he put, as he would say, carpeting. You know, he had that sort of accent going on. And he put the carpeting in. And, you know, and it kind of like moved. It wasn't really installed all that well.
Was it on wheels?
Kind of. It was like the Teflon carpeting thing. And this kind of reminds me of the whole Sopranos thing, because we later learned that this guy, Joey, the man of questionable contracting skills, owned a strip club too. I don't know if it was called Bada Bing like it is in The Sopranos, but he did own
Gentleman's Club.
Yeah, exactly. So we were doing an awful lot of work to bring this building around and get it up to snuff so we can do our first project, you know, break in the studio. But I mean, it needed a lot of work, a lot of rotting wood, a lot of water damage. It was just ridiculous. We had 6 months worth of work to do and we had 6 weeks to do it in, and we did it, which was the amazing thing, with the help of Joey and his amazing roofing and carpeting skills.
Did he ask you for protection money?
No, but he said two amazing things. And yes, he sort of did. He did say something the way you would expect a mob guy to talk to you.
It would be a shame if something bad happened to you.
Yeah, something like that. But no, he didn't make any threats, but he did drop a line. But anyway, the whole strip club thing comes first. We had a really long day. We were putting in 8, 12, 16-hour days, whatever, to get this studio going because we had a hard deadline. Our first band was coming in by date X. Studio had to be ready by date X. It was a big deal. It was a big band. It was that band, the Stormtroopers of Death, S.O.D. It's got Charlie Benanti and
big
Scotty
band.
And, well, they're the guys from Anthrax, really,
right,
is what it is. And, yes, I was assistant engineer on that record.
Woo.
Anyway, so we had a really long day, and Joey got into liking to hang around at the studio. You know, he liked to just come in and just sit down and watch and be a personality. And anyway, at one point he goes, "Listen, you guys have been working really hard around here. Why don't you all come down to my strip club?" Or he probably said my club or something like that. "Why don't you guys all come down to my club and I'll have my girls screw you?" But he didn't say that. He used the F word. We have to still maintain the PG rating here.
Very nice guy.
Well, because he's a nice guy, because that's exactly what happened in the first season of Sopranos when the soccer coach came over to the Bada Bing. They were they called one of the girls over and they go, "Hey, take him in the room number one, give him the grand tour." You know? But later on, this guy Joey, what a guy, he had a little sidekick friend, like they do, those mob guys. They got a sidekick, right? And this guy was as dumb as a tree.
You're asking me like I know these things.
You do. You can't lie to me. You can't fool me, Mr. Vowel on the end of your name. So anyway, he had a buddy,
Mr. Z on the end of your name.
His buddy was probably Petey or Pauly, right? We learned that in Goodfellas. Everybody's named Petey or Pauly. Anyway, this guy wasn't the brightest guy in the world, but he really liked the recording studio. He liked hanging around. So
he liked all the shiny things.
the slide-ems and knobbies and the meters and
twittering.
The lights were twittering. And anyway, Joey came up to Tim, my friend Tim, basically the owner of the studio, and said, "Listen, I like you. You know what you're doing. I want you to apprentice my friend here, Petey or Pauly or whatever his name was." He goes, and I quote, "I would consider it a personal favor, and I am a man who knows how to repay favors."
This is laughable.
I mean, it's like right out of a movie, right? But I was there. I saw it.
Yeah, those guys like to play it up, too.
Yeah, they totally do. The funny thing is about this guy, Joey, turns out he's a big Alan Holdsworth fan, and he's a jazz guitar player, and he could really play.
Oh, geez.
He was an amazing musician.
Well, Christopher on The Sopranos was a filmmaker, too.
Yeah, he bought a special program to do script writing.
That's right.
And, his girlfriend listened to a lot of radio, so that makes her a record producer.
Christopher! That voice goes through my head. Christopher.
We're talking about Dre Amateo, De Matteo, or whatever
his name
is.
Something like that.
Or as the people in Rome say about that bar, which I would call De Matteo's, they say De Matteo's. So.
Yeesh. Yeesh.
I know. So that's my mob story for the day. And I wonder what happened to Joey.
I don't have any mob stories.
No? I'm surprised. I'm
why
shocked.
Why would you be surprised?
Well,
Expound on this.
Oh, come on.
Astonishment.
I'm waking up.
Rich is having a Twitter
in his eye.
I don't know anything about the mob.
Eh, whatever.
Someone asked me that once when I was in college.
Uh-huh.
Because they found out I was Italian, and they said, "Do you know anything about the mob?"
What'd you say?
I said, "You're serious, right?"
You go watch a movie.
I said, "My dad is a physician, and that doesn't mean he breaks people's legs."
Physician of the mob?
That's right.
I don't know.
Oh, man. I hate those stereotypes, but, the mob stories are fun because what stereotypes?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Dumb.
Well, yeah. Hello. Who didn't know that about Polish people? Come on.
That's right. Polish people are dumb. Irish people are drunks. Indians run 7-Elevens. It's all the same.
Or gas stations. Italians are sculptors.
Italians are sculptors, and they happen to work in the plumbing business.
Or the carpeting or roofing business.
Well, I'm speaking specifically of Mario and his brother Luigi.
Or they might own a strip club called Bada Bing.
That, too.
I wonder if there's actually any strip clubs named Bada Bing.
I'm sure they sprung up all over
mysteriously,
New Jersey.
6 years ago, they sprung up.
Oh, we have tunes. Let's get off the stereotypes here.
All right, let's check out this tune. We think you're going to like it.
I dig it.
All right, we'll talk about it later. Thank you. That is a smoking piece of music.
All right, Larry King.
We love the King.
He's speaking of Larry King, I wanted to talk about him in a sec. Larry King is one of those guys who, when he dies, they're going to put him in Lucite and they're going to travel around the country.
Carbonite.
With him. Carbonite, even. This guy is just... Ugh.
Anyway, that was Dusan Bogdanovic.
Say that again, 10 times.
Dusan Bogdanovic. He is a Serbian composer and guitarist. And I first heard that song, actually.
What was it called?
Allegro Molto, from his Mysterious Habitats CD. And I heard it on All Things Considered between segments. And then they put up that website, All Songs Considered, whatever it was. So yep, I went there, and I found out what the song was, and I bought the record the next day. Well, actually, that's not true. Nobody actually carries something that interesting. So I ordered the record the next day from a local music store. And I figured this guy is pretty big now. You know, he wouldn't actually have his email address on his website. You know, how you go to some websites and they have their management up there or whatever. So damned if he didn't have his email address on his website. So I just asked him if we could play his stuff. I explained to him the circumstances about how I came to know his music. And we actually briefly spoke about a Croatian guitarist I saw at the Munson-Williams Proctor Institute two weekends ago, Robert Belinic, and they were familiar with each other. So I spoke about Dusan Bogdanovic with Robert Belinic, and I spoke about Robert Belinic with Dusan Bogdanovic.
Again, like say that 10 times fast.
Oh, my God.
And I'll give you a dollar.
I know. That would be tough. So anyway, that's a really strong piece of music. In fact, I think it's the strongest piece of music written for guitar that I've heard in a really long time.
And what he played is the definition of chops. He's got chops.
Yeah, the guy's wicked. Really good.
Yeah, so Larry King. I was watching Larry King, and I saw quickly on the Larry King show, on the television show on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
Who do they have as a guest?
Tony Robbins.
No. It's on the board.
John Hudson.
No. You're just looking at the random names on the board. No, who he had as a guest?
Tom Hanks.
No.
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
That would be a wonderful guest. I'd love to see Stevie Ray come back.
Mike Hutchins.
Although he wouldn't be very good anymore.
Jimi Hendrix.
No. Although every single one of the people that you've mentioned would be a million times better than this guy.
They would be fantastic Larry King guests. He'd throw softballs at him all day long. It'd be a love fest.
As all of his...
Just say it out loud.
John Mark Carr.
I don't even know who that is, so you need to explain that to me.
Okay, John Mark Carr. In case you haven't heard, in case you've been under a rock for the past year...
Si, senor.
John Mark Carr is the guy who... He admitted somewhat, sort of, kind of, to the murder or being present at the death of the JonBenet Ramsey little girl.
Oh, well, but that was the guy that they learned was a fake, right? I mean,
right.
He was crazy, but he didn't do it.
Right.
Yeah, I just didn't know his name.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about the case, so you're right. I'm not under a rock, but it just this kind of sort of pop culture news doesn't interest me that much. I mean, it's a tragedy, and we need to find out who did it. But
right, which is to my exact point. Why is this guy doing the talk show circuit? And in fact, I talked about this last time, and working from home, listening to the radio, that kind of thing, and I've got this crazy, really cool thing where you can watch TV on the computer and a little TV tuner card.
Yeah, you got the new thing. You got a new toy. John got a new toy.
Yeah, so
it's a dual head card.
So I was
got two monitors going up there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yep.
Crazy talk. So I've got in a window, I've got the news going while I'm working, and some people can do that. It's amazing.
In a window?
In a window.
What operating system do you run?
Tables. Microsoft Tables.
Ventanas.
That's right. So I've got in a window the news going, and then there's this talk show comes on, and there's another guy interviewing him. This guy's making the talk show circuit for doing what? Being a pervert, being a...
Admitting to a crime he didn't commit.
Right. Well, and being an admitted pedophile. And it just disgusts me that people are giving this guy airtime. They're how do I say it? They're giving in to the prurient curiosity of the American culture. We want to know about disgusting, weird things. And this guy keeps talking about...
I don't.
Sex, well...
Which is why I'm totally
Because you're already weird. You don't want to
Because I'm
know
under
that
a
I'm,
rock.
That's Well, of course. You're like Patrick the Starfish. You live under a rock.
I live in San Francisco. I actually live under a bridge. It fell on me.
You're a troll. And you don't let anyone pass unless they answer three questions.
That's right. None shall pass.
So it just really freaked me out, and it bugged me that this guy is actually
it
becoming...
It vexes you.
It vexes me.
You're vexed.
I am confounded. I'm almost speechless, but not.
Well,
not
yeah.
Quite.
Why this guy is news is beyond me. I mean, it was news when he admitted to doing it because they hadn't found out he hadn't done it yet. And yeah, it's news. The JonBenet Ramsey thing was big, and I'm actually going to kind of, you know, we're going to do a little detour and kind of
segue
into the JonBenet Ramsey sort of girl. What are those things called?
Pageants,
beauty pageant things. Yeah,
yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about this, but. This person is a little bit disturbing because...
He's a lot disturbing.
All right, a lot disturbing. Because today it seems like we're spending so much time watching people like him and important things, real things, not someone who's just admitting to things that didn't happen. Real things are going on in this world and we're not paying any attention to them and we're getting complacent.
Yes.
Opiate of the masses is what
yes.
the television is. And it's
the Colosseum, violencia.
And that's exactly what it is. We've got these... weird oddities going on. We're all sitting around. We're going, yay. And we're, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down. Kill the gladiator when real important things are being done behind our backs.
And thumbs up meant kill, by the way.
That's true.
Yes. They got that wrong in Gladiator.
Well, then Fonzie, every time he gave someone the thumbs up, he was saying kill.
Indeed.
He was a kind of a brute. And then
he jumped
the shark.
He was a tough guy, you know?
So, yeah, and if
I don't mean to make light of what John is saying. I just mean to make light of him, actually, so much.
It's his nature. He can't help it. Yeah, and the JonBenet Ramsey thing, that's disturbing in and of itself.
Yeah, well, we'll explore that a little bit down the road. But, well, yeah, okay, now I know who that guy's name is, or what his name is, anyway.
And the only reason why I know his name is because I've got kids, and every time it comes up, anything about... It's an empty glass. Every time it comes up, anything about this guy, I think about my own children being in that position. And it really freaks me out. Really freaks me out.
Well, I mean, the good news is the likelihood of anything that like that happening is very slim. So
yeah, it is good news. And
just keep him away from Lewis Lent.
True.
That's another guy. Another one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but something... is going on in the society, and people are a little bit screwed up. And it's I'm not talking about just the pedophiles. I'm talking about we, the people who sit around.
Yeah, we have a bizarre cultural thing going on.
Fascinated by the pedophiles, and I think that we're, you know, not unlike the stuff that's going in Iraq, where we're antagonizing the people over there, and we're causing some of the people to get a little bit disturbed and become insurgents. It's not unlike that, where we have a lot of these people who. They want to become famous.
Well, they're products of their culture, right?
Right. I mean,
you can't avoid it.
Yeah. We, as a people, we're showing that it's okay to become a weird wacko because you're going to get airtime, you're going to become famous, and you're going to probably make a few bucks.
Well, what was it Andy Warhol said?
And you know what? That guy was a genius. I still contend that he was.
And what was it he said?
In the future, we will all have 15 minutes of fame.
Or, to quote John Lennon, everyone gets a book.
That's true.
And what he meant was eventually all of the people who worked in and around the Beatles would get to write a book about them and sell it, you know, once the Beatles ended. And that was what he meant about it. And that's similar to the 15 minutes of fame thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like that fish. What's the name of that fish? Is it a remora?
Trey Anastasio.
No, the fish.
Trey Anastasio.
What are you talking about?
He's the guitarist in Fish.
Different fish.
Oh, okay. I'm really disappointed you didn't catch that.
I'm not a fan.
Neither am I, but I know Trey Anastasio.
You know, Rich goes from town to town. He follows these guys. He barely bathes occasionally.
Patchouli oil. It's the key to not smelling bad.
That's right. No, the fish. What's the one that sort of sticks to the shark or always hangs out by the shark and follows its droppings and it tries to eat?
Well, that metaphor is true, not just in fish. There's the birds that hang on the cows and pick the lice off them.
And
they call that a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. Well, that's what's going on here is you have the entire society is the shark and you've got these freaks who are...
Fonzie jumping it.
Yeah. The dung is falling off the society and these freaks are living off of it and it makes me disturbed.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's definitely something going on, and I mean, again, it's this sort of bizarre thing I want to tie into people not making enough money to live, and there's so many things that are influencing people's behavior and what's coming out in the end. This soup of behavior is turning into...
I was just talking about that stuff coming out of the end.
Yeah, the broth of behavior. You know, what
broth?
I don't know. But, you know, we have all these influences. We all have all these stimulus, all these stimuluses, all these stimuli, all these stimulizes. And we're ending up with some pretty messed up people.
Yeah. That's my point. We're messed up.
I mean, speak for yourself, mister.
I admit it. I'm a little messed up.
Well, you are. What are we drinking then, anyway?
That wine was so good from last time that we kept drinking it.
Yeah, we kept the bottle a week, actually. Yeah. No. Should we tell them?
No.
Okay.
Secrets are secrets.
That's right.
We have to keep that veil secret. Of secrecy.
It's a veil. It's a pall. A black pall of secrecy.
It's the fog of war.
I saw that film.
So we've got more tunes. I'm not going to rant anymore about the depravity going on in this American culture. But
good word, though. Depravity. Good wine, that.
All right, Polo. Yeah, Rome is going to be coming up in another season soon.
I'm really excited about the whole Rome thing. I actually am more compelled by Rome than I am by The Sopranos, but The Sopranos is good enough to keep me watching. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just a bunch of sociopaths. I mean, you know, hello, right from wrong? What's that?
Well, when we reviewed Rome, we were talking about Rome before. It's basically the same show, a bunch of Italian guys in the mob.
Well, and Tony Soprano actually said that. There was one of the early episodes where there was a Hasidic Jewish family or something, and they owned a hotel, and like the son-in-law of the owner of the hotel was supposedly extorting money from his father-in-law. And at the end of the day, after the son-in-law explained everything, I was sort of on his side. But the son-in-law looked at Tony Soprano and said, "Have you ever heard of Masada?" And it was a great miniseries in the early 80s, by the way. But it was the story of the couple of hundred Jews who basically fended off the Roman army for years. They lived on this mountaintop, and the Roman army slowly was building this ramp to get to the top. And they basically fended off the Roman army. And at the end, when the Roman army was going to break down the wall and kill them, they took their own lives to keep victory from the Romans, right, so they wouldn't be able to claim the victory. So they basically, it was just a giant waste of resources. Anyway, so this guy was pointing out how he wasn't scared by Tony Soprano, and he's like, "Have you ever heard of Masada? Well, that's me. And look where the Romans are now." And Tony Soprano looked him in the eye and said, "We're the new Romans." So just like you made that point, kind of the contrapositive or converse of that or whatever it is.
Contrapunto, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of your point in reverse, you know, the mob or the new Romans, the Romans or the old mob, whatever. You know?
Yeah, it's like the cycle of life, the circle of life.
Everything, what comes around goes around.
I think Disney said it best, the circle of life. Or was that Elton John? I can't remember.
It's a giant cliche. All I know is we need to make hay while the sun shines and...
At least I got my help.
A stitch in time saves nine. Anyway.
I'll see you when I see you.
Yeah, if I don't see you first. What are you, threatening me? Let's play the song.
Hello, Olivia. Hello, Olivia. Hello, Olivia. Hello, Olivia. Trésor d'amour et de joie, petit bonheur, petite fleur. Hello, Olivia. Hello, Olivia. Hello, Olivia. Hello, Olivia. Le soleil fait des merveilles. C'est Olivia qui s'éveille.
That was different.
I like to think the two pieces of music we've played today are interesting and quirky and the kind of things that you don't get to hear on your normal XM radio for Kirsten or whatever radio station you're listening to.
I actually got up in the middle of that song and I was dancing.
There was a little moment in the middle where she was singing sort of root five harmonies and with the sort of percussive little bongo thingy. It just sounded very medieval to me, and I love medieval music. Actually, I love kind of medieval through Baroque period music, and that song was just quirky and different.
He also eats mutton on occasion.
With my hands.
And he is served by wenches.
Well, that's the only way.
And he drinks out of pewter.
I actually do. I have a couple of pewter mugs that I bought at Reed and Sheldon, that wonderful store, when they were going out of, not going out of business, but that sort of implies
retirement.
Failure.
They were closing because of retirement.
They were just closing to retire. Yeah. But yeah, that was really cool. That was, what was that one called?
If I'm mistaken, please forgive me, but I think it was Hello Olivia.
By Maria De Angelis. I think that's the third song of Maria's we've played. She was so kind. Once again, not Podsafe. Kind enough to send me a 2-CD sampler set of her music that she wrote or co-wrote and gave me permission to play. I think she's fabulous. I think we should actually interview her someday.
She's Gatorific, I think.
She's songstress-erific.
I don't even know what else to say. She's fabuloso.
She is, and I really like the two pieces of music we played today. And one of my goals, as sort of one of the guys who programs the music here at NPR, I mean, VIB or VB or whatever,
Vibber.
BV.
Something like that.
My goal is to find music that you're just not going to find just anywhere, and hopefully I feel like I'm achieving that, and you guys can all email me and tell me to go to hell. I don't care.
Well, and we hope that it's not just music you're not going to find anywhere else. It's good music because, you know, you could definitely find someone playing, you know,
the Abyssinian nose flute, the zixic. Right. It's the zixic.
They can play that little boingy thing in their mouth.
A jaw harp.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called.
Boing, boing,
some PVC piping and pretend it's a didgeridoo.
Actually, you know who does that and they do a great job with it is Blue Man Group. They build really cool instruments out of PVC pipe, and I saw them play Led Zeppelin.
Cashmere
with mm-hmm. these really bizarre PVC pipe instruments, and it was really cool.
I've seen them do a percussive thing, too, where they've got this little setup where they bang on these big, wide PVC pipes. It's almost like the sewer piping, maybe like 3 or 4 feet wide. And they just bang on them, and they tune them even. It's just crazy.
Yeah, well, that's what they were doing with this other thing I saw, and they're doing some pretty clever stuff. At the end of the day, what they're playing is basic kind of four-form music, but they're really approaching it from a really new way, kind of like the way Penn and Teller are really doing a lot of traditional magic, but they're mm-hmm. putting a really new twist on it. So Blue Man Group is kind of the Penn and Teller of music.
They and some of the groups that, like Stomp, they became sort of a cliche.
Moment Chance and guys like that. They did that really cool mime stuff.
Mm-hmm. What they're doing is that they're showing that you know, music and art, it can be fun, too. It doesn't necessarily have to be just this snooty thing that people sit around and talk about with their pinkies up, like you do when you talk.
At work. Yeah.
At work.
Everybody makes fun of me because they say I speak the Queen's English at work, and when they make fun of me, they hold their pinky up. They're doing an impression of me speaking, and they always hold their pinky up.
Well, at work, Rich also wears an Elizabethan collar.
I do.
I think he's got a jester that follows him around.
And he's slipping on banana peels. It's just crazy. So where are we at now?
Well, we've got stuff to talk about. Another film, this is crazy. This is almost like weird synchronicity.
We both saw a film.
Both of us. We saw the same film.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
No, I saw that a long time
ago.
And
I think the answer to that is Mary Steenburgen, by the way. But that's another thing entirely.
He's really ticked off at her. She just gets him.
The Matador,
yeah. This was Pierce Brosnan. Yeah.
And what I loved about this film was that he, and many people, most critics were calling this his best performance ever. And I think the reason why they were saying that was because he wasn't relying on his James Bond British Remington Steele charm. You know, it wasn't all good looks, fancy clothes,
yep.
and British accent and a lot of charm. He was playing this sort of aging, stressed out hitman who does corporate gigs.
It's corporate gigs. What it did is...
And who was in this film?
Greg Kinnear.
And he's going to be in the film I'm going to talk about in a few minutes. How crazy is that?
I think Greg Kinnear has done a lot of stuff.
I want to see the Hogan's Heroes thing he did, the Bob Crane thing.
I saw that. You should see it. We should talk about that.
Okay, because I actually liked Hogan's Heroes, as dumb as it was. So, clank!
Hogan! Yeah, no, Hogan's Heroes was good, but yeah.
Or what about Hochstetter? What is this man doing here?
This is the all impersonation show.
I met Werner Klemperer, but I think I talked about that last year.
Yes, you did. Hogan's Heroes and what the heck is his name? Greg Kinnear. We were just talking about him. Greg Kinnear, I think that he's been in so many things, and he's more than just a character actor. I think he's done a lot of amazing work.
I think he's a little samey, but I think he's got some range.
Yeah, and he's got a way of being humorous, and also he can pull off a serious role. But yeah, this film, The Matador,
Matador.
In case you haven't seen it or in case you don't want to see it, which you'd be crazy. Greg Kinnear plays a businessman, goes down to Mexico, hangs out with a colleague of his. They're trying to get a job. They're trying to get a contract.
Yeah, they're trying to score a contract.
Right. And then they hook up with Pierce Brosnan. Well, not they. Well,
his partner goes home.
Right.
He flies home. And he's going to stay, and I think he's going to make another pitch or something like that to
the
business, because they weren't convinced. They weren't sold.
That's right. And in the hotel bar, he meets up with Pierce Brosnan, who is another guy who's down there on business, but just who happens to be a hitman.
An assassin. He does mostly corporate gigs.
And they sort of strike up this weird friendship. Pierce Brosnan is sort of burned out and on his way out of the business, and Greg Kinnear is trying to get into his own business. But what it shows you is, no matter what business you're in, you're still a human being, and you've got all the foibles and flaws that any human being would have.
And I also think it shows that despite the fact that he may be a hitman or an assassin, he's still a human being with feelings and foibles. You know, there's a human being trapped in that body. John, what's that buzzing?
There's an airplane landing. You know, we're doing the show today from the landing strip at the New Jersey International Airport.
See, the T-neck.
That's right.
John's got a neighbor who's a little obsessive. I think we talked about it last week. He likes to mow. Well, it's like nearly dark here on a Saturday, and he just fired up the weed whacker. It's like he can't even see what he's doing.
He's blowing leaves around.
It just rained. He can't even be blowing leaves around. It's just nuts.
You know, and what bugs me about this, again, we were talking about this, I don't know how many weeks, months ago, where people are obsessed with the whole lifestyle. I think keeping up with the Joneses and it forces people to try to make more and more money. I think this is part of it. It's a symptom. People are trying to always primp and preen their houses and their yards, and they want to make them perfect. Personally, I don't care. We got leaves falling down. They're going to fall. They're going to decompose. And it's the cycle of life.
They're going to create leaf mold and make my nose run.
We can only hope.
And another thing that was sort of this film in a very small way. Yeah, the whining is the leaf blower.
Yeah.
Either that or it's the neighbor's wife. I don't know. But, ba-dum-bum. Oh, that's going to get me in trouble. Just like in Pulp Fiction, these were guys who were sort of like hitmen.
Right.
Wise guys sharing their sort of innermost feelings with each other, much the
theories
way.
Theories on foot rubs.
Yeah, I am the foot freaking master. And much in the same way that Pierce Brosnan's character, whose name I don't remember, shares his sort of innermost feelings and Greg Kinnear back.
And I'm not going to give anything away, but because you should see this film.
Yes.
But what I really liked about the movie was how it didn't go down the predictable path and try to make it into a serious, dramatic conclusion. What they did is they sort of played it down. There was a conflict, and it got resolved, and there wasn't anything sinister about it. Even though the guy's a hitman, there wasn't anything sinister about it. And if you see the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. Greg Kinnear goes down to Mexico, as we said, and he has this business problem, and the business problem isn't resolved. And throughout the film, they sort of imply that something happened where the business problem was resolved, and they don't take the easy way out.
Right.
They play that down.
There was a twist that I didn't expect at the end of this film, totally. Also in this film is Hope Davis, who plays Greg Kinnear's wife, who was in About Schmidt and, she was the evil sister in Proof.
That's right.
I'm not a big fan. For some reason, the first role I ever saw her in, she was just evil, and I haven't liked her since. But
she had one great line.
What was the line?
Remember when Pierce Brosnan just showed up at their
house? At the house in the winter?
Yeah, and she knows about him because Greg Kinnear, after he got back from Mexico, you learn, obviously told his wife about this run-in with a hitman. And she finds out that, you know, he's here, and she's getting all excited a little bit that there's this colorful character. And she comes up to him and says, "Did you bring your gun?"
Yeah, she wants to see his gun.
"Can I see it?"
Yeah, and she wasn't freaked out by the guy at all. It was like, it was sort of like Tony Soprano's Neighbors. They think it's kind of cool to have a mob guy in the neighborhood.
Yeah, he's like
a
celebrity, kind
of. Yeah, and this guy was kind of a celebrity who killed people and did mostly corporate gigs. The interesting part of the film, though, was I'm into sort of processes and people's thought processes. There was a part in the film where they went to a bullfight.
Hence the matador.
Hence the matador. And
don't give away why it's called the matador, though.
Right. But Brosnan kind of showed him how easy it is to pull off one of these things, really, if you're a pro. Mm-hmm. He explained to Greg Kinnear what he would do to create a diversion and the different things he would do to make his route of escape more accessible and more easy.
Yep.
And it was sort of interesting.
Yeah, they just picked a guy out of the crowd and they pretended they were going to go whack him.
Yeah, and I actually think Kinnear thought he was going to kill him briefly. And,
well, he didn't know where it was going. In fact, right. He half believed him.
Sure, I did too. I think that created a lot of tension, and then Brosnan was just laughing about it. I mean, you could be so cavalier about it. And there is a scene in there that I think is absolutely hysterical, because once again, Brosnan has sort of lived off of his British charm and his good looks and the tuxedos and the bow ties. There is a scene where he's marching out to the pool in his Speedo with his beer belly hanging out. It's just disgusting. It's like, we don't need to see this. And he's wearing like these boots, like these work boots in his Speedo, and that's it.
No, he's got like the British Beetle boots kind of thing. Yeah, you know, they're boots.
But they come up a little higher. Yep. They come up like ankle high. And the only other thing is he might be carrying a towel, but he's wearing the Speedo and his guts hanging over.
He just had the beer in his hand. He walks out to the pool and he jumps in the pool, and then for the longest time, he's just underwater and he's seeing things. And to me, that was just like a tip of the hat to The Graduate.
Right.
When Dustin Hoffman went underwater and he was sort
hung
of like
out.
Yeah,
he
was
vegged.
He was assessing life and sort of trying to figure out what was going on. So, yeah, I thought it was a great film. Great performances. It was kind of quirky. I think it was somewhat low budget, but I think very, very successful. I would give it definitely a couple of fingers.
Yeah, I'd give it a couple, and I thought it was phenomenal. I was very, very pleasantly surprised. I rented it only on the reviews. You know, Brosnan's best performance. You're going to like this film. Two thumbs up. It did get two thumbs up. And, we concur. Speaking of Leo DiCaprio, I saw Catch Me If You Can, and he was pretending
I love that film.
Yeah, he was pretending to be the doctor, and he actually got called down for an emergency. Some kid damaged his leg on the bike.
Calling Dr. Bembe.
And he had just watched some TV show, and one of the doctors asked the other doctor if he concurred. So he dropped that line on the two interns.
Do you concur?
Do you concur, doctor? Well, I don't. And then when DiCaprio left, the doctor said, oh, shoot, I should have concurred. It was ridiculous. But I want to talk about a film, and guess who's in it?
Greg Kinnear
was in it. It's a film called Little Miss Sunshine, and I know John wants to see this, so I'm not going to talk about it in too great a detail, but this
I'm
going to
plug my ears and run around saying la la la.
I know you are, but what am I? Who's in this film? Alan Arkin, one of my favorite actors in the world. This guy is phenomenal. I was telling John about this made-for-TV movie I saw in the late 70s. It was called The Defection of Seamus Kudirka. It was about a Russian guy, you know, the whole Cold War thing, still going strong. A Russian guy who wants to defect onto a Coast Guard ship and the hijinks that ensued after. Very powerful performance. One of these days I'm going to have to see if that's available on DVD or VHS and rent that again. But Alan Arkin's in this. Greg Kinnear. Tony Collette, who we've seen in other things. Steve Carell, who is the 40-year-old virgin, and he's phenomenal. He's just a really funny
guy.
He's
a comedic genius.
Yeah, he really is funny. I mean, Paul Dano and Abigail Breslin plays the little girl. And this film is kind of a send-up of the beauty pageants. And we were kind of talking about the whole JonBenet Ramsey thing and
exploitation.
I'm going to use a word that I never use. I don't find porno, for example, pornography obscene. It doesn't bother me. It's just people that are a little voyeuristic. They want to see other naked people. Who cares? Whatever. But these child's beauty pageants, I find obscene. I see these little kids dressed up like trollops and these hair extensions and makeup, and they're prancing around showing off their bodies. And I'm like, what is wrong with these parents? I mean, I'm just totally horrified by this. How do you feel about this?
Well,
do you concur?
I concur.
Okay, you should have concurred.
I concur with a capital K. I mean, this is crazy.
That word has two Ks.
It's right, and it has three R's. that whole beauty pageant, adult beauty pageants are a little bit bizarre in and of themselves, but these are people who are sort of making their own decisions. These little kids, they have no idea what's going on.
And it's usually just parents who were in beauty contests who didn't make it, and they're trying to live vicariously through their kids, and it's like, it just drives me nuts.
But it's not necessarily just that.
No, of course it's not just that.
I mean,
but
if they
if
they were dressing the kids up in like overalls and they were as kids, then they'd be exploited as kids. That would be bad enough as it is, but what they're trying to do is make them into sex objects in most cases, and they're doing swimsuit competitions.
Totally, yeah.
And if people weren't pedophiles before, they're totally tweaking that. I mean, to me, that just really, it's very, very bizarre that they're treating their kids like tiny little adults.
It's very, very, what's the word I want?
Inappropriate.
It's inappropriate. The word I want, I'm groping in it, and I'm not finding
vomitatious.
The word. Vomitatious. Now, that word
it's
has
putrescent,
a history.
Even.
Vomitatious has a funny story. Someday we should tell that. It's sort of like Zlekel.
That we will never reveal.
No, that's a, it's like a buvik.
It's identical.
Exactly.
No, I don't know
so,
what it is.
And what I like about this film is that it's a part send up of these child beauty pageants, and it's part road trip because they take a road trip to get from where they live in Arizona or whatever to California, mm-hmm. where the pageant is, and all kinds of weird things happen, and they're funny, and that's fantastic. But when they get to the beauty pageant, it becomes a mockery, and it's just funny in the way it becomes a mockery. And the family is very dysfunctional and then prior to the pageant and the sort of family all joining together to make a mockery of the pageant, everybody was yelling at each other and they just weren't liking life, and it was just ridiculous classic dysfunction. But the family, this pageant helps bring the family come together, and it's terribly funny, and I laughed my ass off, and the crowd doesn't always.
I know, when Rich got here today, he didn't have an ass, and I didn't know what was going on.
When you go to films at Munson Williams Proctor Arts Institute, usually only really exceptional films get people to applaud after the film ends, and at the end of this film, people did applaud. So do yourself a favor and check this one out. Actually, check both of those films out today because I think they're a treat, and this one is a lot of fun. And hopefully John will get to see this one really soon, and we can talk about it a little bit more in depth. I don't want to drop any spoilers on him.
Yeah, because everyone dies in the end. Big bus crash, right?
Well, they are driving a VW bus to get across country, and somebody does die.
You know, the other road trip that
Alan
Arkin
was in? And it wasn't your
in?
Neighbor. He's still doing the leaf-blowing thing over there.
I will take care of him. You know, my guys.
You guys.
The other road trip movie that Alan Arkin was in that I love.
Tell me.
The In-Laws.
I don't think I saw that.
You got to see that.
I'll see it. I'm
Peter
check
Falk
it
was in that.
Well, eesh. Oh boy. Name three stars who have alliterative double A, first name, last name, begin with.
Alan Alda.
Yes.
He was in The Aviator, by the way.
He was playing an evil guy, which is a little different for him. Alan Alda.
Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin, yeah. His son.
Alberto Aramis.
Adam Arkin.
Adam Arkin. Look at
Arthur
that.
Ashe.
Arthur, you're like a veritable plethora of
I was alliteration. I was watching one of those Comedy Central shows, and Adam Arkin was one of the guests of one of the guys who hosted the shows, and he said, name three other stars that have an A and an A for their first and last name. And he went, my dad, Alan Arkin, Alan Alda, and Arthur Ashe. So, you know, he kind of fed me the answers.
We got them all then.
That's all of them right there.
There's none. And if there are any more,
Adam Ant.
We'll kill them. Well, it's not his real name.
I know, but you know, Adam Ant.
He's adamant.
Yeah, he is. Anyway, we're done.
We are done. It is over.
There's not a tumor.
It's over.
I hear cheering.
Yay.
I hear a leaf blower and a lawnmower.
Yes, the leaf blower means that he's happy.
Anyway, check us out on the web, www.bloodyveg.com.
And send us body parts to feedback@bloodyveg.com.
Holy cats. I need to ice my cranium because I hit my head on John's ceiling twice today playing balloon soccer with his children.
Yes, we live in a hobbit's hole.
It's a hovel.
It's 4 feet high everywhere.
Feedback.
I already said that. Feedback.
Oh, check out the forum, www.bloodyveg.com/forum. And
that's it. It's over.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
All right. You're listening to VIB. Talk to you soon.